FFFFR. Been in search all summer of the one perfect film, and to find the others that are deserve to be thrown into the pits of Mount Doom. Fortified only with donuts from Fresh Market this morning. But let us welcome the panel first. To my immediate right, Linda Jader. Good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
And Barbara Bratz.
Morning, Rick.
And Mark the Man Harrington. Don't confuse him with Whitey Bulger.
No. Good morning.
Good morning. No. Well, let us. There's a lot to look back on. 3 or 4 months of popcorn movies. So we'll just see if we can start here. You remember certain summers: the summer of Jaws, or the summer of E.T., or the summer of Raiders of the Lost Ark. But so Linda, for looking this summer, what was the what film kind of stuck out in your mind as the memorable film or the terrible film or what?
You know, it's tough to say because I'm pretty picky in my films and tend to go see. I'm more of a documentary girl.
Go Ant-Man, I dare you.
Ant-Man. I missed that one, Mark. Shucks. In that vein, I probably enjoyed most Amy, the documentary, which I saw recently, and it's still screening. So how about you guys? Mark, Ant-Man, first person?
It was a huge surprise. I mean, I think Paul Rudd demonstrated, you know, his crossover appeal to be able to pull off a Marvel film, even though it was making fun of Marvel films at the same time. Okay. But I think that was on a lot of people's list as a sure bomb, and it ended up doing great. So I think, you know, I think it continues a story of the success of the superhero films, which, you know, is undeniable, and they're entertaining, and the ones that are drawn around good characters are going to resonate regardless if people are sick of them. And so I think that's – if there's one theme that comes out of this other than Straight Outta Compton, which I think is by far the biggest box office surprise, perhaps. The Marvels are here to stay.
Well, I don't think I found my movie of the summer. I think I agree with Linda. I heard her review on Amy, and I would have enjoyed seeing that. I haven't yet. I did go to see Inside Out just because I've heard so much about it and wanted to see it, and I enjoyed it. But as far as being a blockbuster for me, I don't think I'm going to throw any out there yet.
In terms of Linda, the film Amy, and there seemed to be a small group of films that kind of dealt with rock and rollers. We also had The Montage of Heck. And did anybody see Love and Mercy?
I didn't. Actually, that's one I really wanted to see, and I missed it. So I'll be catching that on Netflix soon.
So speaking of Chandler's mention of the movies you're going to have to list for your DVR or your Netflix queue, I guess we'll all have to put that one down on the list. But, Linda, what for you, did the film shed any light on Amy Winehouse or give you any greater perspective than, you know, someone just another sad rock and roller, you know, dying on drugs?
Well, I always enjoyed her music, and I knew a little bit about her story and obviously what happened, but it really, for me, I just really took away from it just the immense talent that she was. I mean, she really was unique and just really tying old standards and new. And it was a tragedy that we lost her so early. And really seeing, as we do with many other musicians that have the same fate, just their inner circle and sort of leading them down the wrong path and how that can happen. But it was I really recommend it if you're a music lover and don't know much about Amy. It's a really great opportunity to learn about this great talent, and I think you really enjoy the music.
And I don't know if that's on the schedule of the Park City Film Series yet.
It will be. Not yet.
Yeah.
Maybe next.
We all know the board person, so call up and say, yes, get that picture. So Mark, you think that Ant-Man will have a sequel?
Probably. Who knows? I think we're struggling here with this question because I think another theme of another way to answer this the question is that there wasn't a standout in the summer. I mean, if you look at a lot of the pre-favorite Oscar lists, there isn't a single film from the summer in the top 10, never mind the top 20. And so I think you did see a shift towards a lot of big, you know, big films waiting for the fall release. This is our March Madness. We can't wait for this season to come upon us, and I'm sure we'll spend most of the show on that. But, you know, everyone seems to have held the big and best and brightest for this fall.
Yeah, the big films of the summer are the ones that made big money and not necessarily big critical successes. And I keep having this mental block with Ant-Man because Joe Dante made a picture called Matinee years ago about and at the center of the movie was a faux sci-fi movie of the 50s about a man who became an ant. It was called Mant. And I keep thinking instead of Ant-Man, I keep calling it Mant. And Barbara, in terms of Inside Out, tell me a little more about Inside Out, because I had seen that picture, and about the kind of the roles of emotions broiling inside this 11-year-old girl. And it was like, I know they a lot of animated films, you know, are trying to go for adults as well as kids. That one was almost too much for adults. I'm not sure if kids would follow that.
I totally agree with that, because I'm not sure the backstory or the slapstick story that would draw the kids' attention was good enough to really pique a child's interest. I enjoyed it. I'm glad I saw it. You can hardly complain about, I think it's Pixar that put it out in the mm-hmm. movies. They really come up with some unique ideas, but that's exactly what it was. They were inside the brain of a child, and the different emotions had their own personality characteristics, and they were kind of fighting over the control panel as to who did what when. And you know, the story was good. I enjoyed it, but again, just not blockbuster stuff.
Hmm. Anybody else see that one? Want to jump in on after the film Interstellar, they put out, I think there was a book that put out, explained the science behind Interstellar. And for Inside Out, they could almost put out a book on that to explain all the theories of psychology and psychiatry behind that picture. I'm waiting for that spinoff.
Yeah, well, I think the director, Pete Docter, you know, he approaches films conceptually. He apparently based a lot of that on his own personal experience with watching his daughter grow up, and I think that the film conveyed that. It wasn't necessarily a children's film, much like his prior work in Up. You know, I think, you know, some kids can get bored with that, but I think intertwining, you know, a lot of those cerebral themes, no pun intended, with you know, these bright grand drawings and animation was a great film.
And the underlying theme, I think, was kind of nice too, because the most assertive emotion was joy, and they all thought that was just the best emotion, and she really wanted to control the panel the most because joy is best, right? And they tried to keep sadness out of the picture. And eventually, in the end, they found out that, you know, a lot of good things happen when sadness is on the scene, you know, with families consoling each other and people that are brought closer together. So it wasn't always that sadness was such a bad thing. And near the end of the movie, when she's turning 12, I like one of the remarks, like, yeah, she's going to be a teenager. What can happen? So they definitely left it open for part two.
For part two. That's for a sequel there. Let me throw out a couple of titles, some of the films that were considered the big hits of the year, maybe the surprise hits, like Mart said, Straight Outta Compton. I haven't had a chance to get to that one, but who's gotten to that picture? Mark, yes. What was tell me a little about that one. Was it sort of a trip back to the late 1980s?
It was. It was definitely a period piece for Compton, you know, the pre-Rodney King music scene, where, you know, N.W.A. And Ice Cube and Dr. Dre, you know, exploded on the scene, literally, in overnight. They made this record that just took over the rap scene and really introduced it to mass marketing. And it tells a story both of their music sort of origin story. And I think that really resonated with a lot of folks that wanted to know, and they just view as rap. You either like rap or you don't like rap. And I think that's how sort of the more mainstream society judges rap. And this film kind of peeled back the layers a little bit. And it reminded me, like any good biopic, it connected both the music end of it with the stories behind the people. And I think it's also timely politically because of the relationship with
Ferguson.
The police interactions and violence and abuse of power. And these were kids when they made this film. They're 50 years old now, but they were kids when they did this. And their visual lyrics were based on their experience. And I think it's hard for mainstream society, as you saw probably in one good scene where their producer is trying to get finance guys to support their first album. And, you know, most people have the same reaction as three out of the four guys in that room did. They just walk away shaking their head saying, you got to be kidding me. You know, this isn't going anywhere. But it did, and it exploded, and it continues. And these were smart guys. And I think the youth culture, which we all forget as we grow older, really loves counterculture. You know, inherently, they want to be part of something that's truthful, it's real, and you tie in good music and dance that makes them dance, and it's going to go. And so this isn't just a black movie. It's not a LA movie. This is a movie of American history, and it took off with a broad spectrum of audiences.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we shall be back shortly and talk about some other films of the summer, and maybe talk a little about if the Sundance films from the most recent festival made any impression at the on the box office or on our panel in the last few weeks. So we'll be right back.
Don't let them in. Don't let them see. Be the good girl you always have to be. Conceal, don't feel, don't let them know. Well, now they know. Let it go, let it go. Can't hold it back anymore. Let it go, let it go. Turn away and slam the door. I don't care what they're going to say. Let the storm rage on. Cold never bothered me anyway.
Wyndham Vacation Rentals is happy to continue our support for KPCW and the Park City community. Wyndham Vacation Rentals has been in business for over 30 years in nightly vacation rentals and property management with a range of services for our owners and guests. 649-6606 or online at wvrparkcity.com.
Ramp is a proud supporter of KPCW. We make high-performance skis and snowboards using innovative green practices right in Park City. Ramp believes American companies can succeed in bringing production back to the U.S. by using the most modern processes. RampSports.com.
Hi, this is Bob Dillon, a lawyer in the Park City office of Jones Waldo with 38 years of legal experience in complex real estate transactions. Proud supporters of KPCW, Jones Waldo provides local businesses with legal services in areas ranging from real estate to employment law. Our website is JonesWaldo.com.
Okay, and we're back with the Saturday Film Review Panel. Tried to give a little inspiration there. It was a Let It Go, and then that little football tryout music. You know, everybody say with me, Rudy, Rudy. So now Mark was talking before about at least there was one popcorn movie that he liked. Let me throw out one more title at least. Jurassic World. Anybody see that one? That cleaned up at the box office.
Oh, I'm it again.
We're looking at you, Mark.
Barbara and Linda just have too much taste.
Now we just all have our silos of films.
I mean, Chris Pratt showed he can deliver on the big time. This obviously it killed it at the box office. It got back to its roots a little bit, I think, in terms of focusing on character rather than just CGI and the dinosaurs. And I think audiences were hungry for the continuation, apparently. It wasn't that great of a film. I mean, I'm surprised it did it as well as it did. But it did deliver the basics, and people liked the reintroduction of a romance sort of and romantic tension between the leads in the middle of it, and that played well. So it was your typical box office summer go to the drive-in theater if you had one anymore and see it. And
there was what'd you think, Mark, a little of the controversy about the depiction of the Bryce Dallas Howard character. There was a little controversy about whether it was a little sexist or simplistic, or you know, the busy professional woman who can't pay attention to her nieces and nephews until disaster breaks loose or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think getting into that kind of criticism of a film that is using a stereotype as a vehicle is, you can point to any film and they're all guilty of that to some degree. And I think it was building off a little bit of Laura Dern's role in the first one in The Scientist, and some of the tension that played so successfully between her and Sam Neill, in terms of, you know, they kind of had the opposite going. One was good with kids, one wasn't, and I think they were just trying to build off that. I think when you start to read too much into pop culture films, then you know there's a lot more appropriate places to bring criticism in terms of the lack of diversity or the true depiction of people in films than, you know, Jurassic World.
A little interested by the parallel that they were trying to draw between Jurassic World and kind of the business model of most amusement parks, which is there's all this pressure to come up with the most dangerous, you know, thrilling new ride, and in this case there was the pressure to come up with a new dinosaur, so they came up with this. What was it? I forget the name of the gnarliosaurus or something, but kind of like the lagoon or Six Flags or something. Have to come up with some new attraction, and hopefully won't, you know, kill people or anything.
Yeah. Well, I think we've hit our Jurassic World meter though in terms of worthwhile time. Let's go on to the Sundance.
The Sundance. Since you brought it up, let me start with that in terms of what was your impression, Mark, of the Sundance stuff that was a hit at Sundance and how it did this summer? And I think they released Wolfpack and
I think the good news is there was a wide distribution of several films, and I think that's a credit to the festival and its penetration into the broader market, but also in the market realizing there's good stories both in documentaries and a lot of these smaller films. From a marketability, I don't think any of them did very well. Unfortunately, they all suffered from like bad name titles. Like there wasn't a good title.
Are you talking about me, Earl, and the Dying Girl?
I mean, all of them. That was probably my favorite film of the summer. I love those coming of age stories. I love Son of Rambo. A few years ago, this reminded me of that film. That was a fantastic film. If you haven't seen it, please go see Me, Earl, and the Dying Girl. Best of Enemies was one of my favorite docs. Again, probably out 7 days or something, you know. Not a lot of people want to see relived like the Buckley Gore Vidal debates, but it was very current and relevant, I thought, to the state of a lot of the way media and TV and a lot of these talking heads are operating today. So this was the beginning of that. And so to see that this film show the origins of that kind of media was fascinating to me.
Time Magazine's top 10, also they listed Me and Earl and The Dying Girl and also Dope, which I didn't see but I heard was very entertaining. So they listed those in their top 10 of the year so far, whether or not they've been, you know, critically acclaimed or audience appreciated, they were in the top 10.
Yeah, and Dope's one of those you hope gets some more play on the coattails of Straight Outta Compton as you know, audiences branch out from things they would typically see and not see.
Yeah, remind me of Dope.
I didn't see it, but it's a group of young black teenagers, I think.
Yeah, it was another Sundance Award winner. I did not see it as either, but just coming of age story, like Fresh and films like that. And so I think it just, it, again, really showed good character driven inner city youth from a different perspective that you don't get to see. And anyone that has seen it raves about it.
Yeah. And Linda, what stuck out for you in terms of what you saw at Sundance and what from Sundance maybe made it to the screens this summer?
Well, it's interesting. I really enjoyed Wolfpack, as did most Sundancers. And it was interesting to see its travel through release and so forth. I think that was a tough one to market. It's a really interesting story, but that you do need to kind of get behind and explain a little bit more about what it's really about. But I enjoyed that and definitely encouraged friends to go see that. I thought it was fascinating. And like Mark, I love Best of Enemies. Again, I'm especially this time as we're getting up to election coverage, it's especially poignant. And
it's only a year and a quarter before the actual election.
Exactly.
It's but also it's a sad reflection, though, when you think of the quality of their discourse and mm-hmm. their debate. And then you look what we're offered today, it's really a sad reflection on our political system in
it
general.
Is. But I really did think it was fascinating. I mean, it was the birth of the political pundit, so it was really interesting. Mm. But I still, Wolfpack, I loved and I enjoyed it, and I just think it was really interesting and yeah. And sad to see it not do so well box office.
And Walk in the Woods, now somebody reviewed that.
I reviewed it.
Yes, and although it's, you know, it has two or three stars in it, it was a Sundance picture. It did play at Sundance.
It was a Sundance picture. Anybody who's read the book probably loves the book, and I think if you love the book, you'll enjoy the movie, so to speak. I mean, it definitely doesn't compare. It's just two totally different situations. You know, when Bill Bryson did the trail and wrote the story, he was in his 40s, and Robert Redford and Nick Nolte are well into their 70s. Nick Nolte looking like he's in his 90s when they hike the trail. So part of it is a little unbelievable, but it still was enjoyable. I'm glad I saw it, and I really would recommend that people take a look at it.
Yeah, it was kind of fun to see. It was nice to see, you know, Redford having fun in a picture when he's usually appears in these things involved in very deep, socially topical, grim issues. So it was fun.
It was funny at the premiere when somebody asked Nick Nolte if he'd bonded with Robert Redford during the shooting. And he said, well, I'm not sure what he would say, but I think we bonded. So.
Well, interesting thing, and somebody I think said, you know, just the central flaw in the believability here is that the idea that Nick Nolte's character
could hike anywhere. Could
it's the first film to use CGI to carry a backpack.
Yeah, he looked like, and actually at the festival, you know, Nolte looked like he had trouble getting around. See, it was hard.
I think there was some hip replacement or knee replacement involved there.
Interesting backstory is that this has been under development so long that Redford had been hoping for Paul Newman to play the companion on the hike, and that would have been, you know, the great what would have been. Because remember the part where they, you know, the two characters fall off the trail and they're on a ledge, and just the idea of Newman and Redford on a ledge again. Over a stream. That would have been
that's bittersweet when you find out that bit.
That would have been sweet. Mark, did you see that one?
I did, and you know, I don't have anything to add. You've hit the nail on the head. It is this, you know, I think it would have been fantastic to see the two of them make that. It's a nice story to recommend to your grandparents to go see, and something else that might not interest them this summer.
Yeah. Well, you know, that sort of brings up the, you know, what do you guys think? These Sundance hits, they seem to, there's developing this tradition of kind of bringing them out toward the end of the summer, the tail end there. And I don't know if that's the smartest time of year to bring out these pictures. What do you guys think? Or is there a better any
you
reflections?
You asked the question about how to market them, and I really don't know what the answer to that is. I think the secret or the blessing is that there are so many more platforms out there where they are shown and viewed. I think a lot of towns now have independent theaters or theaters that will at least devote certain days of the week to independent films. So I think they are being shown more and seen more. But whether they'll ever, the majority of them, make it up to box office success, like a few of them have, I don't know. That's a tough one.
Yeah, my perception is, I mean, that's completely controlled by their distribution and studios, and they don't have any say on that. And they're just, you know, oftentimes, you know, they're plugged in where they think it's going to be a slow weekend and that sort of thing. And then certainly the awards circuit and other festivals plays a role. I think the only one that's truly been held appears to be Brooklyn, which does have a legitimate shot at least getting a nomination for Best Film this year.
And that comes out in November, early November.
Your current slate obviously came out, I think, somewhat intentionally in the fall, Maru.
Sleeping With Other People actually is also coming out this fall.
Uh-huh.
Right.
That would be a good one.
And so, you know, I think the good news is they're getting out. And HBO and others have done a great job perpetuating the ability to see these films over a longer period through television and direct video. So hopefully, you know, they still get seen.
Yeah. And also CNN is picking up a few, too, and tying in as well and more on the news docs. So.
Yeah, so and it is, I don't know, Sundance Picture sometimes is kind of hard to summarize in one of those 60-second ads. It's a little hard often to convey the appeal of, me and Earl and a girl that's dying. Oh, gee, that sounds like, you know, want to get out to that one.
Well, and the stories, you know, it's all about the story. And like you said, it's so many of these movies have such a powerful underlying message that you really don't want to reveal it, you know, in the trailer, because that's part of the enjoyment of the movie. And I think the more people develop a taste for independent film and what a treat they are, that's their key to success.
Okay. Well, the we could move on to a couple of Mark was mentioning before that I don't know if we've seen much so far this year that looks like possible Oscar bait.
Yeah, no, I don't think we've seen anything unless you've had the opportunity to be, you know, in Cannes, in Toronto, maybe even Telluride. If you've been at one of the more recent film festivals, you've gotten some sneak peeks, but there's been nothing distributed yet. I think the big favorites that are being talked about are all coming out in the next 2 to 3 months.
Although one I would like to mention, and in fact it's playing at the Park City Film Series this weekend, is I'll See You in My Dreams. That was one from Sundance that starred Blythe Danner. And this was her first starring role in 50 years in show business. This is her first starring role, and I think she did a really great job in the movie. I don't know if that's something she'll be recognized for at the Oscar level, but she really carried that film and did a great job. If you get the chance to go to Park City Film Series this weekend, see the film.
Mm-hmm. It's a little romantic film for the senior set.
It is, and funny. It's also very funny and entertaining.
And Linda, anything from Sundance or anything Oscar-worthy that, you know, so far?
You know, nothing comes to my mind. I agree with Mark. I think everything's being held to fall and winter and close to the awards season. So I'm really looking forward. It's going to be a busy fall for hitting the movie theaters. So.
Okay. Well, we'll get back to the minutes.
Wake up to the Marketplace Morning Report every weekday at 6:50 and 7:50 during the morning news with Leslie Thatcher. Brought to you in part by Park City and Cushman Wakefield Commerce, commercial real estate.
I'm Joe Hanley of Hanley's Farmers Insurance and proud to support KPCW. Hanley's Farmers Insurance has been offering the Park City community auto, home, life, health, and commercial insurance for over 25 years. I can be reached at our new location, Silver Creek Business Commons, or at 435-649-8656.
This is Larry Warren, and next on Mountain Money, Waypoint Grants, providing money for Utah's outdoor recreation infrastructure. Could you qualify?
And this is Doug Wells. We'll also have my old professor on talking about his book, Leadership BS, Fixing Workplaces and Careers, One Truth at a Time.
And a new dog-centered business in town, all Monday at 9 after NPR News. Brought to you by Jones, Waldo, Holbrook & McDonough, Mountain West Bank, the Park City Chamber Bureau, and All Resort Group.
Yeah, boy, you just let that go on forever, Tubular Bells, that until we exorcise the devil. But Halloween isn't here yet. That's about another month and a half still. But some trends have appeared in the films over the summer and summer coming. But, Barbara, you were mentioning what you think might be a trend of the season?
Yeah, well, you had even mentioned that there had been a lot of spy films coming out, and when I did some research in Entertainment Weekly, I noticed there are a lot of films that are in the same-sex relationship, transgender category that look like they really have potential to be outstanding. And this, again, goes back to the Oscar buzz because Eddie Redmayne is starring in one called The Danish Girl. And if he portrays a woman as well as he did Stephen Hawking, I could see where he could be a nominee again this year. And then there's another movie called About Ray, and that stars Elle Fanning as a transgender youth. And Susan Sarandon, I think, plays her grandmother, and Naomi Watts, her mother. So it's a pretty full cast. And last night I saw them on ET, and they were talking with Jazz Jennings, who evidently is a transgender teen who has a reality show, and she was so articulate about her life and how much she appreciated the quality of this movie that came out, you know, thinking that hopefully it will smooth some obstacles for those dealing with transgender issues. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that movie. Elle Fanning has been a pleasure to watch grow up, just like her sister, and she seems to take on some really challenging roles, and I think that will be a great one to see.
Mm. And then I know Ellen Page and the title of the film escapes me. Maybe
Freeheld.
Yeah, is coming out pretty soon as well. And
which is a true story.
It is a true story, so that looks really interesting. And Cate Blanchett has one coming out in the fall as well.
Carol,
which is set back kind of in the 50s, I believe.
I'm not sure. I know Rooney Mara is her
lover.
Rooney Mara.
Film. Yeah, so it should be really
interesting. Apparently got standing ovations at Cannes, so if the French like it, you know, we must... Must be good.
I also see a little, I continue to see a trend in survivalist films. So Everest, which is coming out this fall, sort of follows that. And actually, that's going to be shown on IMAX. So I think that would be great on IMAX. Interesting to see. But sort of follows with the wild theme with Reese Witherspoon and just getting out in nature and surviving. I know another one that we all talked about was the music biopics. So with Amy this summer and then one up for on Hank Williams, I Saw the Light is actually coming out this fall. I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
Mm. Yeah, and the trend that has been going so far this year is that kind of the spy films. I don't think there's been any great commercial hits or critical hits out of that. I was playing a little TV music there from The Man from U.N.C.L.E. just to stir some old memories of, you know, do you remember how neat the old TV series was and how lame the movie version was? Yet another version of a movie ripping off a TV show and not doing very well. But we also had a few, let's see, earlier in the year we had Kingsman and Melissa McCarthy doing the kind of the comedic version of it in Spy. And
there's also one with Tom Hanks coming out called Bridge of Spies. I'm not sure when that's going to be released or if it has been.
I think that'll be an Oscar contender, looks to be.
Yeah, I think it's October. Yeah, anything obviously with Steven Spielberg and written by the Coen brothers and starring Tom Hanks is probably a front runner, but it'll be interesting to see. That gives a little – it's not your traditional one, and I think Tom Hanks plays a lawyer representing Russian spies in part of the transfer prisoner exchange that's negotiated after the U-2 capture, U.S. pilot is captured. So I think it's got an interesting plot.
And then Snowden, actually, the dramatic film, is coming out with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And, you know, a lot of us saw the documentary about Snowden last year, so it'll be interesting to see the dramatic take. And I know we'll have a conversation with Edward Snowden and here in Park City coming up pretty soon, which will be exciting. So.
Well, there's a number of true stories coming out in the in kind of the fall lineup. Although it's kind of interesting, Joseph Gordon-Levitt doing the dramatic version of two subjects that first appeared as documentaries, the Snowden and then The Walk, which is about Philippe Petit, who strung a wire between the Twin Towers and walked across the gap, and that, of course, was a documentary at Sundance 6 or 7 years ago.
And won an Oscar, didn't it?
Or Oscar? Think awesome. It was that Man on a Wire?
Yes,
Man on Wire. Yeah, and would be interesting to see if that kind of lives up to the subject matter, or they kind of kind of give it the Hollywood pasteurized treatment about, you know, follow your dream, even if it's about walking between two, you know, humongous skyscrapers.
I also, you know, you talk about the documentary and then the dramatic film version. We also have Black Mass, which is actually released this weekend, which I can't wait to see. And I had seen during Sundance this last year, the United States versus Whitey Bulger. So looking at it from a documentary perspective and the dramatic, I think will be interesting. And there are also some other movies that are another take on the dramatic release of Steve Jobs. I'm really excited to see that one coming up. I'm a huge Aaron Sorkin fan, and I've heard it's kind of tells the story as The Social Network did on the beginnings of Facebook. This will be more the beginnings of Max. So it'll be
It'll be Michael Fassbender's, you know, true Oscar opportunity.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Yeah.
This is the attempt at the second attempt to try to do Steve Jobs and maybe do it right this time. After, I don't know, did anybody see Ashton Kutcher as Steve Jobs?
I saw it at Sundance.
did that just over? Did that overwhelm you, or just whelm you, or?
It was okay. I think the most exciting part was when he was still with Demi at that point, I think, and the two of them came into the theater together. So that was kind of overwhelming. But no, the movie was hit or miss.
The movie, no. Seeing Ashton and Demi together, yes. And Mark was talking a little bit about the Whitey Bulger movie before we went on air, and your take on Johnny Depp as Whitey Bulger?
He looks Oscar, I think, possibly, you're hearing a bit about. But.
Possibly. For me, I'm just, you know, I've been so disenchanted with Johnny Depp's role selection for like 15 years that just seeing him go to try and portray a mobster in that vein, it's going to be hard for me to like this film. I did enjoy the book, and I think I'm going to be biased by the complexity of that and current events. But I'm just a little over the Boston gangster movie for its own self, and I think some of the caricatures, you want to talk about using caricatures and using those for a lot of the supporting roles in this, I'll be surprised if I like it. That's all I have to say.
We'll talk to you next week after. Yeah. Yes.
Well, I mean, they've kind of saturated the New York gangster after decades, so they had to go somewhere else, Mark. You know, so they had to go to Boston. So
yeah, well, I'll wait for Tarantino's the Hateful Eight. You know, if you're going to go somewhere, you know, I think he's described that as Reservoir Dogs and Spurs, and so you know, if you want to go back and relive and remix and make a montage out of something, then you might as well be overt about it and just go full tilt.
Yeah, that one is one of my most looked for movies in the season is the Hateful Eight with it. He's assembling. It's almost an all star cast of his previous movies with Kurt Russell and Samuel L. Jackson, Tim Roth, Michael Madsen, so Bruce Dern and Jennifer Jason Leigh, and I've forgotten probably some, two or three of the others in the eight, but that
they used to call that ensemble cast. Now they call it overpacking. Everest. You're seeing that theme. A lot of these films just put in 10, stars and hope they all work well together.
Well, and there's no guarantee. I was noticing, and I don't know anything about either one of these films, but one of the movies that was listed in Entertainment Weekly's worst so far was a movie called Serena, and it starred Jennifer Lawrence and Bradley Cooper, who had such great chemistry in Silver Linings Playbook, and they're also coming out in one this fall that's looking forward to, and it's called Joy, and it's a David O. Russell movie, and it stars Lawrence and Cooper and Robert De Niro. So,
and it's interesting. It's about a stay-at-home mom who invented the Miracle Mop, I believe, that Jennifer Lawrence plays the lead character, and it'll be an interesting take for that mm-hmm. cast. I mean, they're all reunited, mm-hmm. as you said.
But so, just interesting when you put two characters together that have such great chemistry, and then sometimes it doesn't work. So,
yeah, the an interesting mixture of casts. Again, looking back to the summer, was the Amy Schumer vehicle a train wreck? Did anyone else see that one? Once again, Mark raises his hand. But that was kind of an Mark, what do you think? As I was remarking before the broadcast, sounded like some media vehicles are kind of pushing Amy Schumer as the flavor of the year, like the greatest thing on toast. And what's your take on the picture?
Well, somewhere Joan Rivers is smiling from above because I think you're seeing her success flow from the work of so many before her, and she has broken those barriers, and audiences are it's not that I don't think it's the novelty of a crass over just gregarious woman that is super funny. I think there's just, people have always liked these kinds of films if they're done well, back from Eddie Murphy to now. And I think this hit a vein. And
is it done well?
No. I think it could have been, this could have been a great film. I think it just went a little over the top in terms of just letting her be a little bit too freeform. And so I didn't love it, but there were parts it held it together just enough that you wanted her and the guy to stay together and get together, and then it had the happy ending, and so it got just enough Hollywood eyes that it pulled together, and but the narrative and the way she bounced, for all the things that you get critical of, lack of depth for a woman's lead role, those were still here, quite frankly, even though she had the lead role. I would be more critical of this film than Jurassic World in the way they characterize some of the things she struggled with intellectually between job, work, love, and those things, because I think this was actually a worse depiction of those stereotypes, even though she, is able to break through those and went through humor and make fun of them and get them out in a different way. I think to come full circle, I'd be more critical of her depiction of those issues.
Yeah. Looking at it, you could sort of see the familiar kind of rom-com rhythm. So the lead character, they have an abusive lifestyle, and then they meet kind of a more stable, well-centered person, and then they break up, and you get to the third act where the romance has fallen apart, and they're just kind of walking around looking depressed. And then the end, where the heroine does something kind of embarrassing to win back the hero. So some familiar stuff there. It was interesting, you know, you guys were talking before about the ensemble casts or the people you see jammed together in one movie. That you, well, in this one you see, you know, Amy Schumer and a lot of kind of SNL veterans. Interestingly enough,
Hader in that, is he the one that plays?
Hader mm-hmm. and Colin Quinn and a number of other people from Saturday Night Live and other parts,
and LeBron James,
yeah, and the whole thing about turning athletes being used as comic actors, which it was,
or foils. He plays the foil. I mean, he just makes fun of himself. That was one of the enjoyable parts of the film.
And John Cena as kind of this muscle bound guy, and kind of just wearing a neon sign that says "latently gay" on his back. And if I know some people will debate, say, you know, John Cena as an athlete turned actor, you know, and I know you'll debate athlete because he's out of the WWE. But Tilda Swinton playing, it was kind of almost amazing that she's in here as this magazine editor who looks kind of like Bo Derek a few decades older, and Anna Wintourish, and. And on top of that, you know, the 100-year-old Norman Lloyd is an old guy in a retirement home, the guy who fell off the Statue of Liberty, you know, for Alfred Hitchcock in the 40s, and he's still around doing stuff. So that was interesting, you know. A certain Schumer was just interesting to see all these people thrown into a blender in this movie. But if we'll try to get back if we can, for just one final question, and that is the movie out there that the entire universe is waiting for, and I want to get your takes on the next installment of Star Wars.
Additional funding for news and information on KPCW is provided in part by University of Utah Healthcare, located at Redstone, 435-658-9200, redstone.uofuhealth.org, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, and listeners like you.
Oh, and we're back. I did, you know... Speaking of looking forward to things in the fall, I just wanted to ask about who's waiting for the next installment of Star Wars. Or this is kind of one of my questions: is I know we're all here to talk about films that deal with high art and in deep intellectual concepts, but. We'd like to hear your confessions. Is there a franchise that you're really wrapped up with that you follow? And maybe you'd be ashamed to admit it to your friends, but, you know, I mean, Linda, you kind of let it slip. I mean, you're waiting for the next Bond movie?
Oh, yeah. Looks great. Daniel Craig, any opportunity to see him? No, I think I try to see that, as follow that franchise as much as possible, but... I think that's going to be something to look forward to, and apparently this installment really ties all his previous missions together, so I think that'll be a great one to look forward to.
And Barbara?
I have to pass on that one. I'm really not attached to any of the franchise movies out there, so I'm going to look right at Mark.
Oh, bring it. I'm all about The Force Awakens. I'm 100% Star Wars.
Yep.
His eyes are lighting up right now.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a small town in Western Massachusetts. We had two drive-in theaters. They're the only theaters in about an hour radius. And, you know, I grew up seeing the first Star Wars, like, you know, 18 times or something. I still had the scar, the battle scar. I had a, you know, we were playing reenacting scenes, and I cut my hand, and then I got the bandage that looked just like some of the, like the.
That's really the quite a scar, I want to say.
And so, and I still went that night to see it again, and so you know, with pain medication, wearing off. So, no, I think I'm excited. I think J.J. Abrams has nailed the releases to date. They've played it really smart. I think again, another theme being back to basics. I think this franchise is gonna reboot. I don't think it's so much The Force Awakens; it's Reawakens for me. Right. I hope so. Yeah.
And they're getting their marketing out there early.
Yeah. After the,
it's gonna be stuff. Huge, you can already buy stuff.
Yeah. Well, after the prequels, you know, we're kind of hoping that, you know, for the next trilogy, that JJ is gonna get it right. And I love, you can't show this on radio, but I love this picture from Entertainment Weekly about, was showing the kind of the Star Wars gathering at the San Diego Comic-Con. And as you can see, there's this forest of people holding up lightsabers, and including, you know, Mark Hamill and Harrison Ford and the new cast, and they're all wielding their lightsabers. And the interesting thing is the way this photograph is taken. There's one, Carrie Fisher is obscured. You can't see her face, and it looks like she's just standing there texting in the midst of all this. So it's gonna be interesting to see. And if any of you guys know how to sign up early for tickets, please pass that on to the rest of us. We're just about done with the film review panel for autumn, and you can chat back with us in early December. We'll talk about how the fall season looks, and by then, hopefully, we'll have the lineup for the next Sundance Festival out, so we can take a look at what the program's got for then. But in the meantime, I'd like to thank very much Linda Jager and Barbara Bretz and Mark Harrington.
Thanks, Rick. It's been fun.
Okay. Enjoy your Saturday.
May the Force be with you.
You're listening to KPCW Park City. We'll be back at 6 minutes after the hour of 11 p.m. Thank you for everyone in the film review. From NPR.